This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Being incarcerated takes away many of the rights that you would have as a free person, going places, seeing your family when you want to. But what happens when you're released? How does society view you, and what kinds of opportunities are available for you? In 1969, Dorsey Nunn was sentenced to life in prison for killing a man. After serving 12 years of his sentence, Nunn was paroled in 1981. Back on the outside, he realized there was very little help for him or people like him to make new lives. So he took matters into his own hands and started working with other formerly incarcerated people to address issues of employment, education, and voting rights. In 2003, he founded All of Us or None, an advocacy group that's won victories in its campaign to ban the box, that's eliminating the question of former incarceration on job, housing, and other applications. Dorsey Nunn came by our studios to talk about what it means to be a formerly incarcerated person. I asked him what it was like when he first stepped out of prison at the age of 31.
First of all, I had hustled when I was in prison, and I had rented an apartment 3 months before I got out. Hmm. And that was, you know, really fear-based. So on the way to get to my freedom, they never did provide a vehicle for me to sustain myself once I was out. So the whole time that I'm getting ready to come and parole, I'm doing all kind of crazy things in order to survive because I was in fear. And I was a younger man, and I got out at the age of 31 going on 32. I was extremely muscular. Because the period of time in which I served my sentence was the most violent times in the history of United States prisons. So I was always exercised in thinking that I was going to have to do combat when I was there. So it wasn't just like I exercised my mind, I exercised my body also. Mm. So then when everybody told me that I can get these jobs that everybody kept thinking I could get, they were unavailable to me because when I walked in, not only was I black, I was black, muscular, and could engage in a conversation that was quite challenging. You know, so it's like I never did get the job. When I first was released, I didn't have a flight thing in the back of my head. So I would be very confrontational because that's what the environment that I had left. You know, and I can remember getting in an argument on the bus and pulling the card and got off the bus while the person was cursing at me. And I was standing on the side of the bus laughing, just laughing and laughing and laughing because it was the first time that I realized that I didn't have to fight.
What at that time, what kind of tools, what kind of services were there out there for a person like you?
There was none available to me.
None
available to me.
You figured it out by yourself.
I figured it out. The tools that I had was...
The people.
Was the people.
Mm.
It was the people.
All of Us or None. Mm. How did it get started? Where did the idea come from? What was the need?
I guess the birth of All of Us or None comes from a concept paper that I initially wrote. And it wasn't called All of Us or None. It was called Save Ourselves. And I started writing this concept paper, and every time that I floated it out, people started giving me input. Then sooner or later, it wasn't necessarily my concept paper, and it belonged to a broader range of people who had contributed. We had a meeting in Oakland where we invited formerly incarcerated people from up and down the state of California to envision a movement about them. And what would they do with that moment? What would they do if they could build something that could speak to their needs coming from the hearts and their souls of our movement and our body of people? And that day we dreamed of a whole bunch of stuff. We started dreaming of, started recognizing that we had a commonality that we were never able to address when we were in siloed the way that we were. We had conversations that we didn't get a chance to talk about when we were on the prison yards and in the jails. We started talking about when you got out, was your kids crazy? You know, we start talking as parents. We start talking as older people. We didn't make a distinction between the juvenile justice system and San Quentin prison, because there were people that were had just got out of juvenile that was in the room. And we was all experiencing this range of ideas, and we were excited about it. Then shortly after that, we went into a gathering of people. A gathering of formerly incarcerated people. We met again in New Orleans. And when we met in New Orleans, we adopted the name All of Us None. Shortly thereafter that, we wanted to fight structural discrimination. And in August of 2003, we went to the Congressional Black Caucus Legislative Weekend and announced that we wanted a remedy for some of the discrimination that we were facing.
And the discrimination came in the form of what? Where would you feel it?
We felt it all over. We felt it in the question of employment, because it was structural in nature. It wasn't just a feeling. You can visibly see it. You can visibly see it right now. You know, so if you go and pick up an application for employment, you're picking up an application that's going to ask you about a conviction history. In the event that you decide to apply for a student loan, you could have that question bite you again. In the event that you were going to apply for housing, you could have that question bite you. In the event that you were going to apply for life insurance, it could bite you again. That's what structural. Nobody put that on the application to actually mean that they wanted to help me. They put that on the application to screen me out. So it was structural discrimination. And when we got to the Black Caucus and we laid it out, we don't necessarily, at least I don't necessarily think they was as receptive as they could have been or should have been.
What did they say?
They didn't say very much, and they did very little.
That sounds like it was discouraging.
It was discouraging, you know. And I can remember what I was saying. I can remember, y'all don't remember Fannie Lou Hamer. Y'all don't have a clue that you got a population that could be millions of people. And in those millions of people, there could be brilliant people. And we shouldn't have the ability or think that we should have the right to throw that many people away, throw that genius away. Because what we can see is that our communities have already been devastated. We could see that. So when we came back and we started organizing, out of that fight came this thing that we would fight to end structural discrimination. The first part of the campaign became known as Ban the Box. So between the time that we started and we wanted to do that, I can tell you right now that there's over 100 million people living in a jurisdiction where the box have been banned, 13 states and over 70 jurisdictions. And I can tell you, the person that walked out the gate of San Quentin walked into the gates of the White House within the last 3 weeks. So it's not necessarily where I came from, it's where I'm at and where I'm going, which is the most important part of this story. Yesterday is yesterday. Where I take this movement to this next is different.